But here's a little glimmer amidst the gloom. The pandemic has sure made for cleaner air. As you heard earlier on the news, Paul Monks is head of the College of Science and Engineering, Professor of Atmospheric Chemistry and Earth Observation Science at the University of Leicester, former chair of the UK government's Science Advisory Committee on Air Quality. And he's on Skype now from Leicester, I imagine. Hello.
Good morning. Yes, from Leicester.
This is a pretty big experiment you couldn't have dreamt of arranging.
Oh, no, it's quite amazing. I guess we have to say that, you know, obviously we're in a global pandemic and people are dying. But if something good can come out of that terrible tragedy in terms of understanding what we could achieve in terms of cleaner air for us all to breathe, then there is this sort of glimmer of hope, as you said, for us all.
Unless you say that, yes, we may have cleaner air, but the economy of the world is about to go into a recession stroke depression. It would be nice if we didn't have to do that to have the other.
Yeah, so it's interesting, actually. The last time we had a global depression, the air quality gets cleaner. So global depressions drive air quality because it drives down the amount of industry and traffic. So I'm not really saying that's a solution to air quality global depression. But I think for me, the silver lining from this is it sees what we could achieve. And we've struggled a lot in air quality to achieve cleaner air. And I think that this gives us a view of what we could have, that brighter future. We could actually, by decarbonising our transport and industry, achieve that goal.
It's mainly, as I understand it, nitrogen dioxide, which has fallen. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, the images that we've been looking at from space measure nitrogen dioxide. It's a molecule that comes out of the back of cars, diesel and petrol cars, and also comes out from industrial and domestic combustion as well. And of course, what's happened at the moment in the areas undergoing great lockdown is we've seen a huge removal of road traffic and industry driving down those nitrogen dioxide levels. We're also beginning to see as well other pollution go down, like small particulate matter as well.
What does nitrogen dioxide do to us? Why is it good that there is less of it around?
So it's a molecule that exacerbates asthma. It also makes it worse for people that have got lung and heart conditions. Also, it reacts in the atmosphere to form another pollutant, which we call ozone, which you may know from ozone holes, but ozone near the surface is actually bad for you. So actually, it's an all-round molecule that actually the world has really struggled to remove from the atmosphere.
Is this also a proxy for climate change? Is cleaner air also less climate change or slower climate change?
So I think the climate change question is part of what actually is really interesting in this, because in a sense, what I was saying earlier is we could be looking at a situation of what happens if we were to turn all our transport electric. So if we were to turn all our transport electric in a decarbonized future, we could see the sort of gains in molecules like NO2 or air pollution that could be there. What we've got to remember about electric transport is only as clean as the electricity you use to charge the vehicle. So if we were to do it today, for instance, in Europe at least, or the UK, we produce more air pollution because the power that we use to generate electricity, the mixture of coal, nuclear and renewables, means we produce more air pollution. We just move the air pollution from the street side to the power station. But actually what we're looking at here is turning off all of that. So we can say, well, actually, if we did really electrify our transport, we could maybe get these sort of gains that we're seeing.
The worst hit areas, of course, and this has helped the reduction of the pollutions, the worst hit areas have been the industrialised areas, Wuhan and northern Italy. And that feeds into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, what we're seeing across the globe actually is these sort of reductions. In Wuhan, which is a city of 11 million, which was in lockdown, it's very, very stark, the differences. Over 500 million in China were in lockdown, and we saw that. We've now seen the effect in northern Italy, which is very stark, really over a week and a half, the levels went down. The data is now looking very strong across the US. So it really is kind of social tracking of the amount of lockdown that is going. And in the UK now, we're beginning to see those first levels come down as the lockdown hits really hard in the United Kingdom.
I can't help thinking, however, and this is back to an earlier point, that President Trump could well say, well, yeah, sure, you can reduce greenhouse gases, but at the cost of the economy. So let's just go ahead and mine.
Well, no, I think there's a golden opportunity in the future. And I mean, this is the challenge of the green economy. And we've seen it through a number of environmental problems where you don't have to have a win-lose situation. You don't have to have bad air quality and good climate change. What you've got to do is set policies up and economic incentives that allow you to have those win-win benefits. Air quality and climate change often chafe against each other. I mean, New Zealand is well known for its wood burning. Wood burning is good for climate change policy, absolutely appalling for air quality.
Yes, although we're also known for our relatively high rates of renewable energy. So you win some, you lose some as well, don't you, each way?
Yeah, I mean, actually burning wood, though, in large power plants, in renewable energy and solar are actually quite clean. It tends to be small scale wood burning, particularly in stoves. That is the particular issue, rather than actually if you burn it in a power station. Ironically, it's cleaner than coal.
5 years ago, Paul, you predicted that air pollution would be the world's top environmental cause of premature death by 2050. Yeah. Do you think that coronavirus may have delayed or changed that?
I think, you know, as you were discussing with your last guest, in some respects, that the challenge that we all face at the end of the coronavirus is what we've learned from this.
Yeah.
You know, what we've learned as a society and what we've learned about ourselves. You know, I think it challenges to think about our working practices. It challenges to think about the way that we pollute. You know, so I think that, you know, I, for one, will be saying, you know, I'm not going to travel as much for meetings. I can be much more effective now through teleworking. You know, I'll have had 3 months of practice at it, you know, but actually that could drive down pollution. So I think we could actually be positive about this.
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. You're quite right. Will people just resume business as usual when this is over? Or will the lesson have been learned and, more to the point, put into practice? Will we all want to leap on aeroplanes and go to far-flung places because we're out of the lockup? Or, like you, will we be more resistant to flying and stay at home and work from home?
Yeah, I think we've got to challenge ourselves around that. And I think that we've got to reflect on that. And we can see the sort of environmental gains, the sort of environmental benefits that come from that. But I think it's back to your earlier point, though. How is that economically incentivized? I think is always something that this kind of argument comes back to.
Somebody has asked me, I don't know anything about this, maybe you've heard about it, what thoughts do you have about the McPherson paradox, where the reduction of air pollution results in an increase in temperatures? Oh, I see, because they're suggesting that pollution acts as some kind of protection to the solar energy.
That's absolutely right. So that is, we call that the bumpy road to recovery.
Right.
So in a sense that some of the aerosol particles that we produce in air pollution actually absorb solar radiation and actually cool. So as you clean the air pollution up, you get a temporary warming that goes up. What we think about that is two things. The question is, you know, it's very difficult to say to somebody you should die because, if I'm to use a slightly pejorative term, because of air pollution. And actually, if you use a mixture of policies correctly in the terms of which knobs you twist, you can actually avoid that bumpy road where you get that temporary warming as you reduce the air pollutants. So it is possible, a bit like mixing music, to be able to balance the different knobs in terms of the emissions to balance some of that out. But it is a challenge.
Yeah. And who's in charge of the knobs?
Governments are in charge of the knobs. Governments are in charge of knobs. I mean, in
no,
a sense...
No, I want to be in charge of the knobs.
Well, yeah, maybe you could write to the government and ask them.
The other thing that I found interesting reading about you is that you've been working out how to chemically analyze a person's breath via a type of mass spectrometry, because there are volatile organic compounds in people's breath. And I'm just wondering whether that could be a diagnosis for all sorts of things, including COVID-19.
Ah, that's really interesting. So you said mass spectrometry early in the morning, which is good going. So, I mean, the same ways that we measure air pollutants in the air, and we measure very small amounts of molecules. I mean, I've been doing the same thing on your breath. And essentially, the chemical molecules on your breath tell you about how well you are. Because essentially, all those chemical molecules on your breath, and there can be thousands of different types on your breath, are a reflection of all the chemical processes that are going on inside your body. So what we've been doing here in Leicester is looking at a way of analyzing those in infinite and exquisite chemical detail. And what we've been able to find so far is we've been working particular on what's called the breathless patient. So when a patient comes in very short of breath, there's three or four things that are wrong with them. They're either having a heart attack, they're having an asthma attack, or they've got respiratory disease, COPD or asthma. And actually what we found by measuring the molecules...
That's three things. Breath, what's the fourth thing?
COPD, sorry. Obstructive pulmonary disease. So asthma,
chronic
COPD
obstructive
are slightly
pulmonary.
Different.
So it's heart or asthma or COPD, or was there a fourth thing?
Yeah, so it's... I'll start again.
Yes.
I'll do the list.
One, two, three,
so
four.
You're either having a heart attack.
Yes.
You've got respiratory disease, you're having an asthma attack, or you've got COPD.
I thought COPD was respiratory disease.
It's a different type of respiratory disease.
Okay.
To asthma. So when you come in very short of breath, and actually we can tell from the molecules on your breath which one of those is.
Wow.
And what that allows clinicians to do is make decisions about how to treat you.
How interesting. And how fine-tuned could that be?
Well, I think the possibilities are infinite. You said about COVID. Well, COVID is a respiratory disease. I mean, I have to say that, you know, in order to do this so far, the stuff that I've just described to you has taken us nearly 3 years. So, you know, it takes a while to what we call discover the biomarkers, discover those markers on your breath that are related to a specific disease.
Talking about pollution also, I note that your university is involved in the Space Park Leicester. I don't know whether that's ongoing at the moment in these times of crisis.
Yeah.
But you've been, you know, in the business of translating data from satellites, and multinationals are involved, and you're into low-cost satellite production, and you aim to change the economies of space. Is that going on still? And B, isn't that going to pollute space?
So that's still going on at the moment. So we are a very large university in terms of space and space research. I think we're moving to working greater alongside industry. We're trying to democratize the access to space. So at the moment, space is the purview of governments, about the only people that can afford it. But what's happening is satellite cost is becoming cheaper. So you can build a larger number of low-cost satellites. And now companies are beginning to launch those in what we call constellations around the Earth. So rather than building one big satellite, and I'm actually probably speaking to you on a satellite at the moment, actually, which is a telecom satellite. Rather, they cost about $1 billion. They take about 18 months, 24 months to build. Actually, with constellations, you can produce two a week, every week, and then you can launch them as a cluster.
Yeah, but...
Now, I think the challenge is the one you want me to get to,
yes,
is space debris and the issues around that. And actually, what the satellite business is doing is now creating satellites that go out to hoover up in orbit to remove the debris that is there. But it is a real challenge. It's a real problem. There are millions of pieces of debris, and the Americans track those moving around the Earth because they can cause a real danger to things like the International Space Station.
Yeah, and also light pollution.
Yeah, light pollution is an issue, and actually also another issue around satellites is the frequency bands. In contrast with the mobile phone networks, the mobile phone networks are stealing more and more of the electromagnetic spectrum, which is making it difficult for some of our satellites as well.
I'm obliged to ask all our guests on the programme this morning, Paul, how are you getting on in the lockdown?
Yeah, well, I mean, so far, yeah, you're so good. It's been, with working at a university, it's been an incredibly busy week while we get all our students online and all our staff safely at home and able to work. And that's been it's been a very, very busy week. I think the challenge for us is going to be turning this into the new norm. So far, so good. And I probably won't be following the World Health Organization advice on having a drink after talking to you tonight.
No, don't do that. Thank you. Very nice to talk to you, Professor Paul Monks, who was Skyping us from Leicester, talking about pollution, which is much improved, of course.